And welcome back in hour number two of the Outdoor Show. And, you know, just about 1 week ago, probably 20 minutes south of where I'm broadcasting here in Baldwin County, there was a big fishing rodeo going on, a tournament, the Billfish Unlimited. And the winning marlin was 124-inch, 746.2-pound blue marlin. And the gentleman that caught it joins us now, and from one Donnie to another, Donnie Rouse. Donnie, congratulations on this big fish, man. What a catch.
I appreciate it, Don. Good morning.
Give us a little description of what went on. Yeah, what went on? How far did you go to find the fish?
Yeah, sure. I was it's about 150 miles south of Terrebonne Parish, and which put me 270 miles or so from Orange Beach, where the tournament was held. We had a good tournament started on a Thursday. We had a good Thursday, getting out there, catching bait, finding fish. And, you know, we found this particular fish on a Friday at about 7 p.m. I hooked it, and fish cooperated. Team did a fantastic job, and we had the fish on the boat right at dark.
Wow, that's pretty quick for a fish that size. What bait were you
absolutely
using? What'd you catch it on?
It was a live black fin tuna.
What size? How big was the tuna?
I'd say it was probably 7-8 pounds or so. I mean, it was average sized black fin tuna, I guess.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that's a great catch. And, you know, whenever someone catches a fish like that, Donnie, you get the credit. But it's really a team effort. Explain what goes on when a marlin gets hooked up with the team on the boat.
Yeah, absolutely. So first we have the captain who is, driving the boat, making sure I stay tight on the fish and maneuvering the boat around to keep the correct angles on the fish so I can continue gaining line and doesn't get slack in the line so the hook pulls out. Have my mate who is on the leader. Getting the fish up to the boat so, you know, someone else can gaff it. And then we have a couple other people on the boat who's shooting some video of the fish just in case fish pops off. We can use that as a release fish. And so, you know, everybody on the boat has a job, something to do, and everyone did a job perfectly. And we're able to, to get this great fish for, you know, one of the best tournaments in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes, it is, and what a great facility it is over down there at Orange Beach. Well, this fish came with a pretty good mutual, too. What was the payout for it?
Yeah, right around $405,000 for this fish, which is, you know, extremely large payout. And so that added to a lot of excitement on Saturday night, and we had a good time after that.
I guess you could say that fish was making groceries for you.
That's right.
Donnie, is there any truth to the rumor that you're going to give up the Rouse's Markets gig and turn pro fisherman? You got your publicity agent, Marcy, ready. I can give you a few tips on getting endorsements and all that if you're going to do any of that.
You know, I don't think I'd be able to afford fishing without my day job.
Well, it's a great catch, and certainly you represented the state of Louisiana well in that tournament. Got any future tournaments ahead?
I may fish one more in August, but I'm doing a little fun fishing before hunting season starts and jump into hunting season as soon as the fall comes and be ready for fishing again next year.
I'm with you. Donnie, thanks for coming on with us to talk about it. And again, congratulations on a fish of a lifetime, really.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, congratulations to your whole team called Grocery Isle. What a name. Fits well. Thank you, Donnie.
Thank you.
There he goes, Donnie Rouse, CEO of Rouse's Markets. And you can see a picture of that huge, monstrous marlin on my Facebook page, if you like. All right, coming back right after this, we got Mike Gallo's going to give us a little fishing report on Lake Pontchartrain, Lake Bourne, North Biloxi Marsh, Chef area, everywhere he has boat will travel. His report is next on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. And Born on the Bayou Report with Captain Mike Gallo is a presentation of CETO. You know who they are. Yeah, they call them AAA on the water. And for $249 per year, that gets you a membership for unlimited calls, whether it be to drop you some fuel if you run out, tow-ins, jump start for electrical problems, whatever it takes to get you and your vessel back safely. CETO, peace of mind is mostly what it is, and it's just one phone call away. Captain Chris will sign you up. 504 301-4545, or you can do it online. Just visit ctow.com. Captain Mike joins us now. And Captain Mike, did your trips get canceled in fear of what the storm might have brought in? A lot of people did, unfortunately. It's going to be very fishable this weekend. What's going on?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened with me, Don. My Tennessee group was coming down to fish Friday and today, and we had to make that decision Wednesday evening, and the forecast didn't look too favorable, so we're going to push it into the fall season. I did have successful trips earlier in the week. It was a bit of a grind because the tide was not moving as much as it is today, but it was still productive trips. Had to move around quite a bit, look for bait, either thin fish or shrimp, if you could see shrimp or birds on the water. And the Four Horsemen style popping corks with a gulp below it worked really well. And we put some good boxes of fish together. It just took some time and a lot of moving.
You know, Mike, you mentioned that Four Horsemen cork, and I've been using those too. Why do you select that one? Why do you like that one?
You know, Don, that's interesting. We have this conversation on my boat quite often. I would have told you, whatever, 10 years ago, that a cork's a cork. It floats on the surface, and when a fish bites it, it goes under to let you know you have a bite. I really didn't see any advancements in cork technology, if that's the way to say it. But Aaron over at Four Horsemen, I guess he had a different view, and he wanted a cork that was louder. He wanted the wire to be shorter to where it wouldn't bend. And he set out to make a better product. It's really quite a funny story. You should get him on to tell you about it. He's got a great accent, and it's a really good story. But it just works. It's a very durable cork. It's really loud. It doesn't take as much effort from the fisherman to make a good sound, and that can certainly come in handy if you pop the cork a couple of thousand times a trip. So it just works. It is durable. It is loud. The fish seem to love it. So I go in places in the marsh where I've never seen another boat, and sometimes I find a Four Horsemen cork. So I know somebody's going in there, but now it's to the point when I see one, I want to do two things. I want to clean the marsh up, and I want to get another cork for my arsenal.
Yeah, that sound is important, but what I really like about it is the durability of it. You know, you get the inexpensive ones, and once that wire bends, it's done, you know?
Yep. It's really got a nice wire on it. He also has a sleeve that you can armor the cork. It's kind of like heat shrink. You can put it over the cork and put it in hot water, and you can have older corks that are starting to look bad, the paint's starting to peel off, or you have fish actually bite the cork, and they start to look rough, and he's got these sleeves that you can purchase and sort of revitalize your corks.
Good tip, good tip. Mike, anything else fishermen need to know if they're headed out today? Any advice in which direction to go and where to throw some baits?
Well, I can tell you we certainly needed moving water, and all of our fish were caught where there was hard or shell bottoms. It didn't matter if it was oyster shells or man-made reefs, but those were certainly where we caught fish. I would put the power poles down, and you could hear them in those oyster shells or on that man-made reef. We're fishing in about 6 to 8 feet of water, looking for birds or bait activity on the surface. And if there was going to be fish there, you'd know in 5 or 10 minutes. You'd fan cast around the boat with the popping corks. And if you didn't catch anything in 5 or 10 minutes, move. But if you did, it may be recurring every 5 or 10 minutes. And then you stick with it, and maybe it continues for half an hour. Maybe it continues 45 minutes. But if you go 10 or 15 minutes without a fish, move on, find another similar spot, and start the process over. And before you know it, you have 20, 25 fish in the box. And we had fish anywhere from 13 inches to 20. So there's some good sized trout out there. Of course, there's catfish that'll bite your line. They'll hit that gulp. We still haven't caught any bull reds, but I know they'll be showing up relatively soon. Stay hydrated because it certainly is hot.
All right, all good stuff, Mike. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, they can find you a link from my website to yours. Give them that telephone number if they want to just give you a call, and might want to give that website out too.
Very simple. You can find me at aaofla.com on social media, Angling Adventures of Louisiana, or the reliable telephone, 985-781-7811.
Great info and report as always. We really appreciate it, Mike, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Thank you, Don. We'll see you next tide.
There you go. Captain Mike Gallo, Angling Adventures of Louisiana. Coming up next, if you're one of the many people who like to jump in a kayak and pedal or paddle up for your fish, Butch Ridgell joins us with the Stroking Theme Report. We also call it the Paddler's Report in conjunction with the Bayou Coast Kayak Fishing Club, brought to you by No Wake Outfitters, and it is next on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. And our Paddler's Report in conjunction with the Bayou Coast Kayak Fishing Club is a presentation of No Wake Outfitters. You're going to find them at 1926 Airline Drive, and inside this fine-looking store, you're going to find some fly shop specialists. They also got fly tying and fly fishing classes. Ask about those. You can also pick up some of the latest paddle sports equipment, including the kayaks, some sharp-looking apparel, and outdoor fishing gear and tackle for the local area. Opens up at 10 a.m. today. Stop by and see Justin at No Wake Outfitters, 1926 Airline Drive in Metairie, where the parking is always free. Butch Ridgell joins us now, one of our field reporters. Good morning, Butch. What's going on in the world of kayaking and paddling?
This week's been kind of quiet, Don. Weather, what we thought we were going to have for weather, just that time of year, the heat. Quite a few guys, Justin included from No Wake, were down at ICAST this week. That was the big thing going on down in Orlando.
Yeah, that's the big fishing tackle show, the biggest that there is, and draws people from all over the world there. Very interesting. As far as upcoming tournaments, what's ahead for the paddlers?
Oh, the first thing that we have coming up is going to be September Redfish Rumble for Bayou Coast. I think we are having another Hobie Saltwater over in Mobile out of Dolphin Island with the Mobile Club. And this time of year, we kind of keep it to a bare minimum because of the heat. And, you know, normally the weather conditions we have right now, you never know what's going to happen. But we try to stay out of the heat as much as we can. It's just, it's been brutal. We've gone a few trips, gone out, but everybody shuts it down probably 9:30, 10 o'clock, they're off the water. Except for a few diehards. We've got some that'll stay all day, but everybody's been pretty quiet. It's I went Friday and Saturday myself last week. I went to Joe's Cove and Big Lake and West Cove. And with that crazy full moon and the low tide, it affected with us that morning. It wasn't that great. Caught a few redfish. Mostly small reds, a couple of bulls, but it was not the best trip in the world.
You know, Butch, a lot of the rodeos and the tournaments have included kayak categories, so for fishermen that want to do some competing, even if they don't have an all-kayak tournament, you can get into the kayak categories, and also the Star's got its own kayak categories, too, so there's a lot of opportunity for doing in some competitive fishing out of the kayaks.
Oh, yeah. We actually got a notice from Grand Isle Tarpon Rodeo. They're making sure that all us guys knew on the Bayou Coast side that they had a kayak division. And also, Fushan Tarpon Rodeo has a kayak division. So, everybody gets into it every now and then. Some of us will fish it. If anybody wants to get out and give it a shot, they win some great, beautiful-looking trophies and some nice prizes.
You know, how good would it be to catch a tarpon out of a kayak?
Well, we do have a friend that does that down at the bar.
I know. It brings to mind that photograph that he took of that. That was incredible. We're talking about give him the name. Tell him who that is.
That's Chris. I'm drawing a blank. Not
Chris.
Friend. Oh, Chris Holmes.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris Holmes. Chris. Chris has got a beautiful picture. The one half in, half to water with that. Chris has got a lot of great pictures. I mean, he's done it. But Chris is he's a heck of an angler. I'm surprised he hadn't gone down there. It's that time the tarpon are running right now. But
his kayak fishing is only exceeded by his photography skills. I believe he won an award for that picture. We're talking about sitting in a kayak with a tarpon, and you can see part of the tarpon above the waterline with Chris holding it in the kayak, and you can see the rest of the fish under. I don't know how he took that picture.
It was some special camera that he had that was floating out there that would take both. I saw it, talked to him shortly thereafter that came out. Paddle Palooza, Fallen Tide, or something like that. He's always at those two tournaments, and he told us what it was. But that was a great photo.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to ask him to send it to me, and I can post it on the website because I'm sure people will be interested to see that. It's pretty incredible, and he's a great fisherman and really a real good sportsman. He deer hunts, and he gets around for sure. Well, Butch, anything else we need to tell the paddlers before we wrap up?
That's it, man. It's that time of year. It's kind of in between and betwixt right now. But you want to get out, invite it, do it, be safe, hydrate, all that good stuff. But things will be cranking back up in the fall, basically for us.
Yeah, we got Ride the Bull coming up out of Grand Isle. Sure hope those big bulls start showing up in the passes for the tournament.
Yeah, there's a few there already. But Ride the Bull. Hopefully we died at not a crazy time. We have a good day.
Very good. Butch, thanks for the report. We appreciate it. Hope you have a good week on the water this week.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye.
All right. There he goes, Butch Ridgel, one of our reporters. We also hear from Eric Mohabarak, Louisiana Kayak Company, Brendan Bayard, and also Lance Burgess. All right, we come back after this. It's everybody's favorite. We call it the bad boy of the outdoors, guy sitting in jail as we speak, and a $250,000 fine. We'll tell you his crime and his time right after this on The Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. Deb in Florida checking in. She says, great that you talked to Donnie Rouse this morning about his large fish. Is it going to get sliced up and sold at the store? No, I don't think so, Deb. She says, I actually interviewed Donnie Rouse years ago when they were opening a store in New Orleans. I think it was early on in that adventure for them. Anyway, congratulations to Donnie on his big fish. We also have this question in from Manley. He wants to know, this is from Alabama, will the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fishery Commission consider comments from hunters outside the state, actually from Alabama? I don't think they will, because the hunter survey that they sent out to HIP holders, they discounted any out-of-state responses, did not include them, which I think is totally unfair. If you pay your non-resident fee, and I do that for a lot of states, I think you should have a voice in it. But unfortunately, I don't think your comments would be counted. But it wouldn't hurt to send them in anyway. All right, we have this one, and I'll try to get to that, David, on the sequestration, the carbon sequestration comment. It's a little long. All right, we also have, we got another one that's coming in here. Said, shouldn't the public have the last say on these carbon projects and not the Corps? These companies use the government to hide behind to do these destructive projects, and the public vote on it, because the people of the public are the government. You make a lot of sense, and yes, I think the public should have the last say, but unfortunately, the Army Corps of Engineers is the one that grants it, and they don't take votes on it from the public, but they do take public comment. And also another comment, want to know, how did it get this far so quick? And when I heard from the elected representatives from that area, they have been trying their hardest to get an EIS, to get a delay, and they're kind of getting stonewalled on it. This thing is up and running and rolling. All right, we got a bad boy for you. We do this every Saturday morning. We honor some of those who are the most despicable cases of outdoor outlaws, and we got one for you this morning. His nickname is Doc, and we'll tell you his story when we come back right after this quick 10-second pause to let our local stations tell you who they are and where they are along the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. Well, federal investigators said Doc Antle, a.k.a. the Tiger King, on a Netflix TV documentary, which I haven't had the opportunity to watch. He's also the owner of the Myrtle Beach Safari. He funneled payments through the nonprofit called the Rare Species Fund and he used some bulk cash transaction, falsified records to disguise illegal sales of endangered animals, which included baby chimpanzees, cheetahs, lions, and tigers. Oh, my. All of those are protected under federal law and international treaties. Now, last week, Doc pled guilty to conspiracy charges involving violations of the Lacey Act, which, as you know, involves the interstate transportation of illegal fish or wildlife, and money laundering. The federal investigation revealed that from February to April of 2022, Arnold and a co-defendant laundered over $500,000, believed to be proceeds from an operation smuggling undocumented immigrants across the U.S.-Mexico border. He was into a lot of stuff. The prosecutor said Arnold attempted to conceal the cash by issuing checks that appeared to be for construction services related to the Myrtle Beach Safari, which is a 50-acre for-profit zoo that offers close encounters with exotic wildlife. So, sentenced to 12 months in federal prison, a fine of $55,000, and ordered to serve 3 years of unsupervised release and forfeiture of three chimpanzees and more than $197,000 to the government is 64-year-old Bhagavan Antal, the guy also known as Doc, the Tiger King, and now a bad boy of the outdoors. Yeah, there's no end to him. And this one, he's a well-deserved jail sentence. He's sitting in the jail, maybe listening to the show. I don't know if they get it in prison. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by a couple of guys that love waterfowl hunting, very passionate about it. Ryan Lambert, you know him as the Plastic Man, and also Josh Goins from the Flyway Federation. We're going to talk about why you might need to contact the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries Commission before their next commission meeting and making a determination for the next 5 years of duck hunting in Louisiana, and also how you can get some information from the Flyway series about the migration alteration and what maybe can be done to turn that around. They are next, coming up on the Outdoors with Don Dubuque Radio Network. As he goes by the name of Plastic Man, talking about Captain Ryan Lambert, who joins us now along with Josh Goins from the Flyway Federation. Gentlemen, good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Don.
All right, here's the situation for listeners. The Department of Wildlife and Fisheries has a decision to make with regard to the next five, not this season, but the next five seasons for waterfowl hunters. Waterfowl are managed on a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service federal basis, but they give states and flyways the opportunity to make choices on zones and the number of splits that they would have during the season. Here's where it sits. Right now, based on a small sample size from a survey, the biologist with Department of Wildlife and Fisheries recommended that we continue with option A, which would be a two-zone, a west and east zone, with three season segments. There are some other options. Ryan, you and I have been talking for a long time about the need for a coastal zone option, which would be what's called option D, which would make the entire lower coast be able to set its own seasons and also its zone as far as the dates. Tell people why that's important.
Well, it's because we're coastal, we're tidal. We have tides in, like this year we'll have 26 days with negative tides under negative 0.3, which means we can't go to the blind. Our blinds will be high and dry after negative 0.3, and that's the bottom of it. It goes all the way to a negative 1.2, which you can't get to the canal to go to your blind. So, you know, I've been looking for why this is. Why do we have a east and west? And I've had people tell me, well, the west gets birds out of the central flyway, and they get there first, so, you know, we want to open it. Well, the fact that I am in the west zone and I'm as far south and east as we can be down in the Venice area, that blows that out the water because we're not getting anything out the central flyway. So then they said they want everybody else to shoot first so that the birds will, the pressure will drive them into the middle for their opening weekend. Well, for the people in the coastal zone to sacrifice 26 days, and next year between Christmas, right before Christmas and the end of the season, it'll be 33 days that we won't be able to hunt. I mean, that's taking away half of your season. So I urge everyone to go and contact the Wildlife Commission to get a coastal zone. We want two zones, a north and a south. There's no reason to have an east and west. Birds migrate from the north. So why do we have an east and west? I have no idea. But the only logical explanation for having two zones is because there's some specific entity like tides that would justify having two zones. And if we have two zones, we could have three different splits. If we have three zones, we can only have one split. You know, the first split, the second split is two splits, but only one split in a season. So that's federally mandated. So to have a north-south zone with three splits, they could close it during those negative tides to where we don't waste our whole season not being able to hunt.
Josh, what are your thoughts on the coast, what would be called, I guess, a coastal zone, a north and a south, as opposed to a west and an east, which includes Shreveport and Venice in the same zone, which makes no sense to me?
I can tell you I fully agree with that, Don, that whenever Ryan had told me that the other night on the phone, I was like, you got to be kidding me, man. But the whole thing is, yes, Ryan was right whenever he was talking about birds coming out of the central flyway. Whenever you read any of the old meeting minutes from Richard K. Yancey, that's what he was pointing out back then. But with the current situation that we have within the flyways and the different issues of bird short stopping and all that, I mean, what else can hurt us? I mean, let's try something new and let's do this, because honestly, I agree with Ryan 100%. Let's go north, south zone and split it just like they're saying. And let's see what happens. I honestly think it could really help, because I was one of those tidal hunters at my property, just like Ryan. I've been there. I've been stuck in the marsh and had to call to get another boat to come pull me out. And it's not fun.
Yeah, especially when you got hard freezes and, temperatures that are dropping down below freezing. It can be a safety hazard, right, Ryan?
Well, yeah, when you have 500 boats coming to Venice on opening weekend, you know, people, a lot of guys that just say, let's go hunting, they don't understand what the tide will do and to see ahead of time a negative tide. And you get out there and at 8 o'clock in the morning, your decoys are sitting in the mud and so are you, and a giant cold front comes like we had last year, you're taking people's lives in their hands. Then, well, last year they had to go rescue people out there because of the same reason. You know, there's a story that you could go look up the day the duck hunters died that happened up north. You know, people got caught in a storm and it killed them. But it can very easily happen here because you're stuck in the mud and it's not coming up till that night. It's going to be a long, long, long time for you to get rescued if you can't get a hold. And a lot of times there's no self-service down there either. So, you know, and it's not here. It's all the way to the west side of the state. It's in the Chappelle. Anywhere that's tidal, you have those negative tides. You can see where they are from here to the end of time on the tide chart. And it's very easy to manipulate the seasons to where we don't hunt that. And the fact that it's dry, the ducks go 10 miles offshore. You know, they just sit out in the bay until that night when the water comes in, they come back in and feed. So there's no ducks to go get anyhow unless you got a pond that holds water and you can't get to it because you can't get around the marsh to get to a pond that might hold water. So, you know, it's just a detrimental thing for everybody and for us to give up 30 days of our season for what? You know, just, it's so easy to fix it.
Well, I've got a lot of people that have asked about what's the best way to contact them. I guess you could go and appear before them at the next commission meeting under the public comments, but it's probably much easier to shoot them an email. What should they include in the email to the commissioners, which they can find on the website?
Yeah, it's very simple. Just we want a north-south zone with three splits. Because of the negative tides, we need a coastal zone. And the fact that we have to deal with negative tides from Christmas till the end of the season, you know, we miss our whole January. So, you know, just write to them and tell them that's what you want. You know, we could put up a letter that they, all they have to do is sign their name to it. If they want, we could put it on your website if you like.
Yeah, we can do that and also put it on your site.
I'm willing to put it on mine, Ryan, just like I said the other day, and I've shared it to many people, and I honestly think they need to use that letter. And you know what? Even if you don't agree with this north-south, write in and state your voice. Like, tell them what you want, because as of right now, they're doing whatever they want.
It's a very small sample size.
Yeah, 6,000 people, and a lot of those didn't get back. And I only know four people that it went to. And if it went to the guys in the north, they don't have any inkling of what goes on down here with the tide, so they don't care. Oh, it's fine like it is. Just leave it like it is. Yeah. Well, the people in the south suffer, so we really need to get the people that hunt anywhere below Highway 90 involved to where, well, they understand, because they know they're hunting in no water. They can't go hunting most of the season. So the only way to change it is your voice and to write in and tell them, you know, it's very short. Like I said, we have a letter that's already drafted up that everybody can send in. It's numbers that matter. You know, they've sent in 6,000 surveys. I don't know how many they got back, but, you know, it's nothing for us to get 6,000 people to write in and say, yeah, guys, look, we really want north-south. That's all you have to do. We vote for north-south zone this year. I mean, simple stuff.
Yeah, and it's going to be – we'll have to live with it for the next 5 years. Guys, stay with me. We're going to take a break. We come back. I want to talk about Josh's Flyway series. It's a great podcast that's coming out, and this is not the only issue dealing with waterfowl. There's so much dissatisfaction in Louisiana and other coastal zone states about the seasons and the migration being altered and lots of things to talk about. We'll be back to do that right after this pause. You're listening to Outdoors with Don Dubuque, Radio Network. All right, I want to remind folks, it's very urgent that you contact the commission with regard to that. They'll be setting that for the 2026 through 30. That's 5 years. And there's only about 2 weeks before they meet again, because it's got to be submitted to the feds by August the 30th, and they won't meet again before that. So it's coming up very quickly. Don't delay. Do it today. All right, back with Josh Goins with the Flyway Series and Ryan Lambert, Cajun Fishing Adventures. Josh, you started a podcast with Duke Lowry, and I got to tell you, you've done a wealth of research. As somebody that has to do research, you have dug deep into the archives, and we don't have a lot of time to get into the duckweed here, but if you would explain to what people will hear and listen to when they find your podcast called Flyway Series, and also the duck sickles too.
Oh yeah. So Don, first off, I'd heard you attach my name to Flyway Federation, and yes, I am still the founder, still support them. They're fixing to be going back live, their website, and pushing. But Flyway Series is just something that me and Duke got together, because we've been doing all this research for so many years. Duke was fighting this fight way before me, but we thought that we wanted to educate the public, because Don, if you told someone a story on your show and you only told them the last few sentences, they wouldn't understand the whole story of why someone's talking about this, and anyone could come in and tell them something different and change their mind. So we decided to get this together, and we got with Rex Moncrief, and he has the Outdoor News, and you can go find him on YouTube, Facebook. I'm talking about any social media platform, and we're putting the real facts out, and we're putting them in a timeline from where it all started to where we are now. And I think right now we're in about the late 60s, but as we're going through the show, we reference, as you said, to the duck sickles. We'll reference certain things to show people, hey, this is happening right now. And if you look at this, they talked about this back then. It's history repeating itself. So everyone needs to tune in and actually get the real facts of what happened in the flyway in Louisiana.
Yeah, you uncovered some things that even some biologists were not aware of, and I go back to following waterfowl, and a lot of those things I remember, you know, with Phil Robertson implementing the mallard releases and the request to get the ducks in, and the actual successful short-stopping. Some people deny short-stopping exists or is even possible, but it was certainly done with the Canada geese, and y'all talk about that. It's a great series that you're doing, it, and it airs live on Thursday nights, but they can always catch the replays, correct?
Yes, sir. And if you go to the Facebook page, mine, I'm personally shared. Duke is. I think Ryan has shared some. But you can catch it on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. And it's normally, I mean, it can, I don't know how long the shows will get later on, but it's a great show. And then we shorten it up in shorter segments for the people that just want to listen on their drive to work. So, yeah, tune in and learn some history with us.
Yeah, and Ryan, over the years, you've seen quite a decline like most people have, especially the absence of mallards and other species.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for it, and hopefully we can address some of that so we don't continue to lose the amount of duck hunters. I mean, we've got so many people in Louisiana now that travel to other states to go duck hunting, and it used to be the other way around.
Yeah, that ruins the economy. I mean, just the money that used to come into Louisiana was immense from duck season. And, you know, we've had the worst 3 years in a row on duck counts in South Louisiana, or in Louisiana in general. You know, the worst season is 3 days in 3 years in a row. And this season doesn't appear to be any better because there's a lot of dryness up there. The duck counts are down. And if they stop in the ones that are there, you know, it's going to be detrimental. You know, they should be able to do that on game reserves. They shouldn't do it on, you know, those big reserves that hold all those birds up there. You know, it hurts the hunters up there as well. You know, they do telemetry now. They know exactly what the birds do. So
yeah, and you can find out a lot more about that on the Flyway series with Josh. Thanks for being with us, Josh. We'll get you back on as we get a little closer to the season. And, Ryan, when we get those counts in. And thank you both for what you do for waterfowl hunters. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
And that's going to wrap it up for us. We'll be back again next week, 5 to 7, for The Outdoors with Don Dubuque, Radio Network.